Unit 8, Focus 1, Language Skills. Section 1, Model Passage Reading. A Man with Two Lives. Here is the queer story of David William Duck, related by himself. Duck is an old man living in Aurora, Illinois, where he is universally respected. He is commonly known, however, as Dead Duck.
In the autumn of 1866, I was a private soldier of the 18th Infantry. My company was one of those stationed at Fort Phil Kearny, commanded by Colonel Carrington. The country is more or less familiar with the history of that garrison, particularly with the slaughter by the Sioux of a detachment of 81 men and officers, not one escaping, through disobedience of orders by its commander, the brave but reckless Captain Fetterman. When that occurred, I was trying to make my way with important dispatches to Fort C.F. Smith on the Bighorn. As the country swarmed with hostile Indians, I traveled by night and concealed myself as best as I could before daybreak. The better to do so, I went afoot, armed with a Henry rifle and carrying 3 days' rations in my haversack. For my second place of concealment, I chose what seemed in the darkness a narrow canyon leading through a range of rocky hills. It contained many large boulders detached from the slopes of the hills. Behind one of these, in a clump of sagebrush, I made my bed for the day and soon fell asleep. It seemed as if I had hardly closed my eyes, though in fact it was near midday, when I was awakened by the report of a rifle, the bullet striking the boulder just above my body. A band of Indians had trailed me and had me nearly surrounded. The shot had been fired with an execrable aim by a fellow who had caught sight of me from the hillside above. The smoke of his rifle betrayed him, and I was no sooner on my feet than he was off his and rolling down the declivity. Then I ran in a stooping posture, dodging among the clumps of sagebrush in a storm of bullets from invisible enemies. The rascals did not rise and pursue, which I thought rather queer, for they must have known by my trail that they had to deal with only one man. The reason for their inaction was soon made clear. I had not gone 100 yards before I reached the limit of my run, the head of the gulch, which I had mistaken for a canyon. It terminated in a concave breast of rock, nearly vertical and destitute of vegetation. In that cul-de-sac, I was caught like a bear in a pen. Pursuit was needless. They had only to wait. They waited. For 2 days and nights, crouching behind a rock topped with a growth of mesquite and with a cliff at my back, suffering agonies of thirst and absolutely hopeless of deliverance, I fought the fellows at long range, firing occasionally at the smoke of their rifles, as they did at that of mine. Of course, I did not dare to close my eyes at night, and lack of sleep was a keen torture. I remember the morning of the third day, which I knew was to be my last. I remember, rather indistinctly, that in my desperation and delirium, I sprang out into the open and began firing my repeating rifle without seeing anybody to fire at. And I remember no more of that fight. The next thing that I recollect was my pulling myself out of a river just at nightfall. I had not a rag of clothing and knew nothing of my whereabouts. But all that night I traveled, cold and footsore, toward the north. At daybreak, I found myself at Fort C.F. Smith, my destination, but without my dispatches. The first man that I met was a sergeant named William Briscoe, whom I knew very well. You can fancy his astonishment at seeing me in that condition, and my own at his asking who the devil I was. "Dave Duck," I answered. "Who should I be?" He stared like an owl. "You do look like it," he said, and I observed that he drew a little away from me. "What's up?" he added. I told him what had happened to me the day before. He heard me through, still staring. Then he said, "My dear fellow, if you are Dave Duck, I ought to inform you that I buried you 2 months ago. I was out with a small scouting party and found your body full of bullet holes and newly scalped, somewhat mutilated otherwise, too, I'm sorry to say, right where you say you made your fight. Come to my tent, and I'll show you your clothing and some letters that I took from your person. The commandant has your dispatches." He performed that promise. He showed me the clothing, which I resolutely put on, the letters which I put into my pocket. He made no objection, and then took me to the commandant, who heard my story and coldly ordered Briscoe to take me to the guardhouse. On the way I said, "Bill Briscoe, did you really and truly bury the dead body that you found in these togs?" "Sure," he answered, "just as I told you. It was Dave Duck, all right. Most of us knew him, and now, you damned impostor, you'd better tell me who you are." "I'd give something to know," I said. A week later, I escaped from the guardhouse and got out of the country as fast as I could. Twice I have been back, seeking for that fateful spot in the hills, but unable to find it.
New words.
Queer.
Garrison.
Slaughter.
Detachment.
Disobedience.
Reckless.
Swarm.
Conceal.
Afoot.
Haversack.
Canyon.
Boulder.
Clump.
Sagebrush.
Band.
Shot.
Execrable.
Betray.
Declivity.
Stoop.
Posture.
Dodge.
Rascal.
Gulch.
Concave.
Breast.
Vertical.
Destitute.
Vegetation.
Cul-de-sac.
Crouch.
Mesquite.
Keen.
Indistinctly.
Delirium.
Recollect.
Nightfall.
Footsaw.
Sergeant.
Devil.
Owl.
Inform.
Scout.
Scalp.
Tent.
Resolutely.
Tog.
Damn.
Imposter.
Proper nouns.
David William Duck.
Aurora.
Illinois.
Fort Phil Kearney.
Colonel Carrington.
Sioux.
Fetterman.
Fort C.F. Smith.
Bighorn.
Henry Rifle.
William Briscoe.
Section 2. Listening and Speaking. Listening. 1. Listen to a conversation on the text only once, and then fill in the blanks according to what you've just heard.
"William, I'm so glad to see you." "My God, who the devil are you?" "Who should I be?" "I'm David Duck, Private Soldier David Duck." "You do look it. What's up?"
"Several days ago, I was sent here to deliver some important dispatches, and I was pursued by a group of Indians."
"What next?"
"For 2 days and nights, I crouched behind a big rock with the cliff at my back. On the third day, I could stand it any longer, and sprang out firing my repeating rifle crazily."
"And then?"
"I remember no more of that fight. The next thing I recollect was my getting out of a river at nightfall. I walked the whole night, cold and footsore, and I'm lucky to be here finally."
"My dear fellow, if you are Dave Duck, I ought to inform you that I buried you 2 months ago."
"That can't be true."
"Listen,
I was out with a scouting party and found your body, full of bullet holes and scalped.
Where did you find it?
Right where you say you made your fight.
It's impossible. Are you sure it was me?
Come to my tent, and I'll show you the clothes and letters.
2. Listen to a conversation twice, and then choose the best answer to each question you hear.
Hey, Celia. Looks like you got a lot of sunshine during the May Day holiday.
Yeah, true. I spent 4 days of my holiday at the beach in Hainan.
Oh, yeah? That's great. Why did you go there?
Some schoolmates of mine live out there, and they invited me to enjoy the blue sky, the green lawn, the fresh air, and especially the beautiful sea and soft beach.
But why did you come back so soon? Only 4 days. Why not 7 days?
Oh, I have to finish a paper, which is due on May the 10th, and I just couldn't do any serious study at the beach.
I agree with you. So what did you do at the beach? I mean, besides lying out in the sun?
I jogged up and down the beach and played some volleyball. You know, I never realized how difficult it is to run on sand. I couldn't even complete a whole game before I had to sit down. It's much easier to run in the wet sand near the water.
Did you go swimming?
I wanted to, but they said the water wasn't warm enough for that until a couple of months from now.
It all sounds so enjoyable. I wish I could get a chance to go to the beach like that.
Joe, don't tell me you spent the whole holiday in the library again.
You said it.
All work and no play makes Joe a dull boy.
Questions. 1. How did the woman spend her May Day holiday?
2. Why did the woman stay in Hainan for only 4 days?
3. Was the woman good at beach volleyball?
4. Why didn't the woman go swimming?
5. Which of the following is true about the man? 6. Hey, Celia. Looks like you got a lot of sunshine during the May Day holiday.
Yeah, true. I spent 4 days of my holiday at the beach in Hainan.
Oh, yeah? That's great. Why did you go there?
Some schoolmates of mine live out there, and they invited me to enjoy the blue sky, the green lawn, the fresh air, and especially the beautiful sea and soft beach.
But why did you come back so soon? Only 4 days. Why not 7 days?
Oh, I have to finish a paper, which is due on May the 10th, and I just couldn't do any serious study at the beach.
I agree with you. So what did you do at the beach? I mean, besides lying out in the sun?
I jogged up and down the beach and played some volleyball. You know, I never realized how difficult it is to run on sand. I couldn't even complete a whole game before I had to sit down. It's much easier to run in the wet sand near the water.
Did you go swimming?
I wanted to, but they said the water wasn't warm enough for that until a couple of months from now.
It all sounds so enjoyable. I wish I could get a chance to go to the beach like that.
Joe, don't tell me you spent the whole holiday in the library again.
You said it.
All work and no play makes Joe a dull boy.
Questions. 1. How did the woman spend her May Day holiday?
2. Why did the woman stay in Hainan for only 4 days?
3. Was the woman good at beach volleyball?
4. Why didn't the woman go swimming?
5. Which of the following is true about the man? 3. Listen to a passage 3 times and then fill in the blanks.
In 1982, Thomas G. was sentenced to 12 months in prison for committing a crime. After he had been in prison for 2 months, he decided to escape. In the prison, Thomas worked in the vegetable store. Every day, a truck arrived at the prison with fresh fruit and vegetables. G decided to get away in this truck. When no one was looking, he threw himself under it and held on to part of the chassis. Shortly afterwards, the truck driver drove out of the prison. Without being noticed by him, G was under his truck, hanging on to the chassis. As the truck moved along the road, G held on as tightly as he could. He could hardly breathe because of the exhaust from the truck's engine. However, he knew that if he let go, he would fall to the ground and the rear wheels of the truck would run over him and probably kill him. At last, the truck stopped at its next destination. G let go of the chassis and, covered in dirt and oil, crawled out from under it. He stood up to see where he was. To his horror, he was in another prison. The truck delivered vegetables to two prisons every day. G had run away from one prison and ended up in the other. In 1982, Thomas G was sentenced to 12 months in prison for committing a crime. After he had been in prison for 2 months, he decided to escape. In the prison, Thomas worked in the vegetable store. Every day, a truck arrived at the prison with fresh fruit and vegetables. G decided to get away in this truck. When no one was looking, he threw himself under it and held on to part of the chassis. Shortly afterwards, the truck driver drove out of the prison. Without being noticed by him, G was under his truck, hanging on to the chassis. As the truck moved along the road, G held on as tightly as he could. He could hardly breathe because of the exhaust from the truck's engine. However, he knew that if he let go, he would fall to the ground and the rear wheels of the truck would run over him and probably kill him. At last, the truck stopped at its next destination. G let go of the chassis and, covered in dirt and oil, crawled out from under it. He stood up to see where he was. To his horror, he was in another prison. the truck delivered vegetables to two prisons every day. G had run away from one prison and ended up in the other. In 1982, Thomas G. was sentenced to 12 months in prison for committing a crime. After he had been in prison for 2 months, he decided to escape. In the prison, Thomas worked in the vegetable store. Every day, a truck arrived at the prison with fresh fruit and vegetables. G. decided to get away in this truck. When no one was looking, he threw himself under it and held on to part of the chassis. Shortly afterwards, the truck driver drove out of the prison. Without being noticed by him, G was under his truck, hanging on to the chassis. As the truck moved along the road, G held on as tightly as he could. He could hardly breathe because of the exhaust from the truck's engine. However, he knew that if he let go, he would fall to the ground and the rear wheels of the truck would run over him and probably kill him. At last, the truck stopped at its next destination. G let go of the chassis and, covered in dirt and oil, crawled out from under it. He stood up to see where he was. To his horror, he was in another prison. The truck delivered vegetables to two prisons every day. G had run away from one prison and ended up in the other.
Speaking. Reference answer.
Hi, how did you spend your last weekend?
It was nice. I went back to my hometown.
What did you do there?
I went for a walk in the mountain on Saturday.
Good. Did you do anything else?
I had a river trip the whole day Sunday. What about your last weekend?
Too bad.
What happened?
I played basketball Saturday morning.
That's not bad.
But I came down with the flu Saturday night. I lay in bed the whole day yesterday.
Poor you. How are you feeling now?
Much better, thanks.
Focus 2. Language use. Section 1. Practical reading. One of China's surprises. Brain gain.
In the world's fastest-growing economy, the last 10 years are not the best guide to the next 10 years. As foreign companies attempt to do business in China, their success depends on their ability to get inside the minds of their Chinese competitors or partners. There are several surprises in China's future, one of which is China's brain gain. The ability to attract and retain executives from around the world has provided a higher level of competence for China's enterprises. A glance at the upper management ranks of China's leading homegrown businesses yields a startling view. Not much gray hair. Youthful leadership is the norm because China stopped all formal education from the late 1960s through most of the 1970s, the years of the Cultural Revolution, and thus lost a generation of highly educated managers. To make up for this gap, in a time where managers are needed more than ever before, Chinese enterprises feel an explicit need to recruit and develop responsible business expertise in a hurry. Often, that expertise is imported. Lured by economic reforms, by the excitement of building a nation, and by the central government's incentives, foreign-trained and expatriate managers are bringing credibility, leadership, and financial and marketing skills to the executive suites of Chinese companies. Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates, during a panel discussion at the Microsoft Research Tech Fair held on April 27, 2005, in Washington, D.C., talked about this phenomenon in the context of his own company's new research centers in India and China. Those R&D centers are giving us an exposure to the quality of Indian and Chinese students, most of whom historically would have come to the United States, but more are either not coming at all or coming here and then going back. This represents the acceleration of a 30-year trend. Today's economic success in China owes a great deal to its diaspora, to the Chinese who live abroad. Even when the economy looked permanently stalled, overseas Chinese sent money home. They were also realists. They saw China as a source of cheap labor and of relatives, however, distant, whom they could trust to handle logistics and money. As opportunities expanded in China, these expatriates began to return in person. Entrepreneurs from Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Macau opened factories back home. Students who had won positions in American or European firms returned to China to start their own companies, bringing with them technological and management knowledge, as well as Rolodexes full of contacts, including contacts with one another. In one study of immigrant professionals in Silicon Valley, Annalise Saxenian, Dean of the School of Information Management and Systems at the University of California, Berkeley, found that 73% of Chinese immigrant professionals said they would consider establishing businesses back in their homeland, and a large number had already done so. Edward Tian is a notable example of the influential role that some globally experienced Chinese executives play, even in government-supported enterprises. After earning a PhD in ecology at Texas Tech University, Mr. Tian started a high-tech venture in Texas. The Chinese national government then recruited him to be the CEO of China Netcom, originally a small startup telecommunications firm based in Beijing. In 2002, China Netcom merged with a major part of the incumbent China Telecom, the then state-owned primary national telephone utility, to form a new, giant-scale China Netcom with Mr. Tian as the president. Another example is Fu Chengyu, the president of China National Offshore Oil Corporation, CNOOC, who led that company's 2005 bid to acquire Unocal. Mr. Fu holds a master's degree in petroleum engineering from the University of Southern California. Early in his career at CNOOC, he led the joint management committee, which oversaw joint ventures between CNOOC and global leaders such as BP and Shell. For its part, the Chinese government realizes that to turn startups or state-owned enterprises into world beaters, it needs to build strong management capabilities. Executives of state-owned enterprises regularly attend management and leadership training sessions, held either in China or at top academic institutions overseas. They are thus exposed to cutting-edge Western management philosophy and techniques. Meanwhile, the government's go-out policy encourages corporate executives to acquire foreign assets, not to exploit, but to learn from. The oil industry in particular will continue to be on a global watch for companies that will help China build up its strategic reserves in management as well as in oil. China, in short, is no longer an isolated place, and its bridge to the outside world is this growing cadre of people who are comfortable in both places. The smartest business executives who come to China from different corners of the world have responded with their own willingness to embrace the same qualities that lead to success in China. Intense entrepreneurialism, unfettered experimentation, rapid-fire ambition, openness to outside leadership and alliances, and attention to emerging markets. In this way, these outsiders have also helped create the new Chinese business culture. In the end, rather than either dominance or weakness, China is facing something altogether different, its first chance of a real renaissance in more than 100 years.
New words.
Competence.
Yield.
Norm.
Revolution.
Gap.
Explicit.
Import.
Lure.
Incentive.
Expatriate.
Sweet.
Acceleration.
Diaspora.
Permanently.
Stall.
Overseas.
Source.
Immigrant.
Dean.
Merge.
State-owned.
Primary.
Petroleum.
Career.
Joint.
Capability.
Session.
Cutting edge.
Asset.
Isolate.
Cadre.
Willingness.
Unfettered.
Alliance.
Renaissance.
Proper nouns.
Microsoft.
Bill Gates.
Macau.
Rolodexes.
Silicon Valley.
Anna Lee Saxenian.
The School of Information Management and Systems at the University of California, Berkeley.
Edward Tien.
Texas Tech University.
China Netcom.
China Telecom.
China National Offshore Oil Corporation. CNOOC.
Fu Chengyu.
Unical.
The University of Southern California.
BP.
Shell.